The change in scenery between this and the north side was astounding. Here, the white stone buildings were actually still white, many with huge columns and gilded domes. Motor cars honked at jaywalkers sprinting across traffic circles. The men wore checkered suits, their patent leather boots clicking as they walked. Women shuffled by daintily in their hobble skirts, too fitted for them to take long strides. "It's beautiful," N said.
"It's a bit glitzy," Levi answered flatly.
Something had clearly soured his mood.
"Not really my taste."
"And what is your taste? Cheap cabarets and malt liquor?"
"At least it's honest,"
says the con man.
"Says the street lord," he countered. "At least I know what I want."
She bristled and took a step closer. "And I don't." Who cared if she thought the South Side was beautiful? She couldn't even make a simple conversation without it becoming a statement on her character.
"No," he dared. "I don't think you do."
Lola cleared her throat, her expression disgusted. "We don't have long before the library closes." En nodded, then rolled her shoulders to try to release her tension. Now she was in a sour mood too. Distraction indeed. She didn't even know what they'd been arguing about. They needed to focus on what they'd come here to do. The library was grand, both on the outside and within. The sunset shining through the stained glass windows cast the bookshelves in a sacred sort of glow. Students crowded each of the tables, poring over textbooks and old manuscripts. The air smelled of burning candles and the dust of old books. The quiet reverence here didn't seem like it should exist in New Rains.
"We'll start in the family records," Lola said.
She led them to the third floor, to hallways of displeasing metal shelves, lined with black, leather-bound books.
"It's all so... sterile," Anne said.
"The misers certainly treated family matters as such," Lola said. "For them, talents were commodities, things to be bred."
The accusation in her voice was clear, as though N was just as guilty as her ancestors, despite not knowing her family history until 2 days ago. She opposed their tyrannical reigns as much as Lola did.
"When's your birthday?"
"February 2nd, year 9.
The Whigheads had reset the calendar after the revolution, as it had previously referenced the old faith.
"Can you find her records from just her birthday?" Jack asked dubiously.
"Of course. This is what I do."
Lola followed the shelves down to the ones labeled with the correct year. She grabbed several books and handed one to each of them.
"These are all February. They should be in alphabetical order by blood name."
After several moments of riffling through the pages, none of them found a mention of N. She wasn't listed under Salter, nor even Scordata, Dondolaire, or Alfero. They checked every day for the entire year, but there was no evidence of her birth to be found.
"I was expecting that,"
Lola said nonchalantly, as if it were obvious. Maybe it was. Of course N didn't have a birth record, being what she was. But this was only another reminder that everything she'd once known about herself was a lie. She was so accustomed to being ordinary and ignored, yet now, even with her notorious heritage revealed, she felt twice as invisible.
"We'll try the family trees next."
Although Lola's tone wasn't exactly enthused, it was still somewhat optimistic, and N clung to the hope that there would be something for them to find, something to lead them back to Lourdes. The family lineages were in a hallway much like the previous one, all crates and metal and fluorescent lighting. They sat on the cold, white-tiled floor as Lola plucked out a laminated file labeled Dondolaire. She handed it to N.
"We won't find any Scordata records here. Those have all been destroyed. We're lucky the Dondolaires haven't been too," Lola said. "What is your adopted mother's full name?"
N took the Dondolaire file with unease. It felt criminal even to read it.
Lourdes Reeds Alfero."
While Lola hunted for Lourdes' family tree, N, Levi, and Jack flipped through the Dondolaire file. Levi sat beside her, their shoulders almost touching, so he could examine the documents with her.
N tried to ignore his nearness and focus. The trees included the names of each family member, their birth dates, their death dates, and their causes of death. They looked so clinical, as though they'd been written by coroners rather than historians. The tree ended abruptly on the last page. Claude Dondelaire, she read, mainly for Jack's benefit. Born July 10th, 1884 of the old calendar. Died April 18th, year 9. Gunshot wound. And beside him, Gabrielle Dondelaire. Born November 24th, 1887 of the old calendar. Died February 3rd, year 9. Gunshot wound. Anne shivered. She recognized their names from her history classes. Brother and sister. Arsonists. Circus performers. Traitors.
This has given me the creeps, Jack said.
The blood didn't end with Claude and Gabrielle, however. Their mother, Geraldine Dondelaire, was hanged later that year. Their split brother, Dorian Dondelaire Osiah, saw the guillotine. How dramatic.
Lo merci, Levi said.
Were they not using first names now? N rolled her eyes.
The day Gabrielle Dondelaire died. That's the day after your birthday, isn't it?
They exchanged a glance. That was an unhappy coincidence. Well, N said, her voice catching. I'm sure there are other Dondelaire women who could be... She hurriedly flipped through the pages. Every last Dondelaire, dead before year 10. Not even the most distant cousins of Claude and Gabrielle had been spared. N pointed out the names of several women who could have theoretically birthed her before their untimely ends. Lola returned, two more books in hand. There's no record of this Lord's Reeds Alfero. You sure that's her real name? The last salvageable remnants of N's happy life in Bellamy was shattering. No, she murmured. I guess I'm not.
You sure she's a protector?
Yes, N said. That she was certain of. Just being around Lords, you felt safe. She has an air about her like she's trustworthy.
For everyone? Or just for you?
Lola asked flatly. N thought for a moment. Most of Bellamy society didn't associate with Lords. It didn't really have to do with her frequent vacations to New Reigns, or her often distastefully honest way of speaking. It was something about her as a person, something indefinable. Other people weren't comfortable around her. They hadn't had any friends in Bellamy. It was always just N and Lords in their large empty houses, their weekends perpetually unoccupied, their telephone never ringing.
You'd feel safe like that, Levi said carefully,
interrupting N's thoughts.
If she'd sworn her protection to you.
It was frightfully obvious, now that N knew the truth about her talents. She should have realized it before. Lords must have sworn her protection to N, a seal of magic that kept N's secret safer. But that also meant, by doing so, Lords had surrendered her ability to protect herself. She could never act in her own interest, only N's. N had always considered the practice barbaric, the sort of treachery that miser kings had used for their own benefit. Why would Lords go to such lengths? Was it because she loved N? Had it been a promise to her parents? A belief that N's talents were something important, a piece of Lord's greater cause to be protected?
Did you find anything in the Dondelaire book? Lola asked. Gabrielle Dondelaire died the day after N's birthday, Jack blurted.
Lola blanched.
You must be mocking with me. Gabrielle was... infamous.
Anne waved the other pages.
And we have a list of names of other women in that family. Besides, we don't even know if February 2nd is my real birthday. For all we know, Lords lied about that too.
She mustn't have sounded very convincing, however, because Lola stomped away. Jack jumped to his feet.
Where are you going? He demanded.
To find the newspapers, she snapped. I'm not storming off. I'm not about to... She raised her voice. Let all the world know about this, Schatz. And that she...
She pointed at N, and Jack grabbed Lola's arm and shoved it down.
That she shouldn't be allowed to live.
Her voice was quiet and strained. She could barely say the words, and N realized that was the power of the street oath binding her. She tried not to feel hurt at the intensity of Lola's conviction, but the words still stung. Lola thought of her more as a weapon than a human being. Jack pushed Lola against the bookshelves. N frantically shoved the books back into their places. Levi was already on his feet, ready to back Jack up.
What is your problem, Dove? Levi asked.
I'd think you'd know my problem more than anyone, Lola hissed. Everyone knows about you and Bianca. What would Bianca do with someone like her?
Bianca won't know about her.
Both kept their voices low. Thankfully, there was no one on this floor to hear anyway.
And if she demands you tell her? Lola challenged Levi. I know how omertas work.
Hen's annoyance peaked, as it did whenever people started talking about her like she wasn't there. She stood up and pulled the boys away from Lola.
I'm right here, she seethed. And you might have already made up your mind about me, but I'm not from New Rains. I go to finishing school. I spend my days dancing and curtsying and baking. I dot my I's with hearts because I think it looks pretty. Whatever you think I am, you're wrong. 2 nights ago, you almost killed me, Lola growled. Maybe I know exactly what you are, and you're the one who's wrong.
The words hit N like a slap.
That's not true.
But there was more truth in Lola's words than N cared to admit.
I've lost everything to the gangs. My parents, my brothers. Every time the city finds their favorite villains, people end up dead.
Lola scowled as she looked between them.
So you might be here flirting and bickering as if nothing else matters, but you're all in a library with loaded pistols in your pockets, trying to find Lords Alfaro as if the monarchists are anything other than lowlives. Yeah, I know who Alfaro is.
She shook her head.
This story will end badly.
N blinked back tears. I didn't ask for this. Beside her, Levi put a comforting hand on her shoulder. Her anger at him from earlier disappeared, and obviously his had too. Arguing or not, she still had his support, and that assurance helped steady her. Lola rolled her eyes.
Muck, Missy. Crying now. You're something else.
Can you just calm down? Jack told her, moving between the two girls. His voice was weaker than earlier, though, unsteady. Maybe part of him believed what Lola was saying.
Come on, Levi said, giving N's shoulder a last squeeze. Let's dig up some newspapers on Gabriel Dondelaire, get what we need before this place closes, and go home.
Lola cursed under her breath and walked off, Jack following close behind, grumbling about Lola's hypocritical collection of knives. N and Levi trailed after them.
She's right, N whispered.
She yanked the gun out of her pocket and placed it in Levi's hand. I don't want this. It felt like she was talking about more than just the weapon. He bit his lip but didn't take the gun.
We can leave, if you don't think this is a good idea.
No, no, she said. We need something. Right now all we've learned for certain is that we don't even know Lord's real name. She refused to leave less certain than she'd come. They found Lola and Jack on the second floor, a much more crowded area, among the periodicals. Lola slapped a stack on the closest table, and the four of them took seats.
This is everything from that period. There's a lot. Kids at schools here write essays about this girl.
N slid the newspaper towards her and Levi. The headline read, Capitol Ablaze. But of course, she already knew this story. The Capitol building had to be entirely reconstructed after the fire. Gabrielle hadn't left anything behind in the ruin.
I think I already found our answer, Levi said. Look at this one. Criminal's execution postponed. They had Gabrielle in custody and didn't execute her due to health reasons. And she wasn't killed until...
Lola pointed at the paper she held. Until February 3rd. Unease washed over her. You can't execute a pregnant woman, can you? Anne asked softly. There's even a picture.
Lola turned to Gabrielle's faded headshot. Her hair was lighter than Anne's, her face softer and her skin warmer. Anne searched for some kind of resemblance, but it was hard to be certain. They had similar lips, she supposed, and maybe there was something about her eyes. But there was a grief in Gabrielle's expression that Anne couldn't see beyond.
She's got that old doll thing going on.
Jack gestured to Anne's face, as if that served as genetic evidence.
She looks so young, Anne said. She was only 20 when she died, Lola said solemnly.
Anne turned away from Gabrielle's picture, unable to look at the girl who'd been so ruthlessly executed. No matter what she'd done, it was still tragic to imagine.
The story's right here, between the lines, Lola explained. They discover that Gabrielle was pregnant. Some blood gazer at the birth saw what you are.
She pointed to another paper.
They issued a public apology here, saying the execution was going to be private. Back during the Great Street War, that used to mean the Phoenix Club wanted in on it. They wanted to kill Gabrielle themselves.
You mean the shadow game, don't you? Anne asked.
Beside her, Levi stiffened.
That's what I would guess. A miser baby would have caught their attention.
But she died of a gunshot wound, Levi added. Not in the game.
I heard there was a big chase for her before she died, Lola said. My brother told me stories about it. But the white boots got her in the end.
Maybe she escaped before playing the game, Anne suggested.
Or maybe,
Levi said quietly, as Jack shot him a warning look.
She won.
Anne reached into her pocket and pulled out her token. It was warm and familiar in her hand, something she desperately needed when every new secret she uncovered was soaked in tragedy. Had the Phoenix Club known about some connection between Lords and Gabrielle? And was that why they'd invited Lords to play the shadow game? The card they'd found wasn't the Fool, but that didn't mean an invitation hadn't found her eventually. What if the Phoenix Club knew Anne existed? If she were a member of the Phoenix Club, and she were looking for the daughter of Gabrielle Dondelaire, then a 17-year-old girl in an acrobatics show would certainly draw suspicion. Anne was climbing her way to becoming a real star in the St. Maur's troupe, but she could no longer afford to draw that much attention to herself. If she wanted to survive, then she needed to live as she and Lords had lived, in the darkness, as far from the spotlight as she could. Acrobatics was the one thing she was enjoying about New Reigns. She'd been mediocre all of her life, and the moment she'd begun to excel, she'd have to throw her ambitions away. It was the only way to protect herself, but it felt unfair.
No one wins the shadow game, Lola said.
It's not like they'd want you to know if someone did, Levi retorted.
His voice was hoarse, almost giddy.
No game is impossible to win.
Anne fiddled with her token. So what do we have? A connection between the shadow game, Gabrielle and Lords? That's it?
We're digging up history, Lola said. Did you expect better?
No, but I'd hoped. She swatted at Anne's hands.
Put that key away.
Key? Anne asked, confused.
Yes, that coin in your hand. Isn't that a Royal Bank key?
Levi took the coin from Anne and turned it over, examining it.
That sounds familiar.
It should, Lola said. It's in Old Town. It's the oldest bank in the city.
Anne's spirits lifted.
You mean it's still there? We can find it. Even if their research had been fruitful, learning the identity of her birth mother had brought her no closer to finding Lords. But this...
Don't involve me, Lola said. Old Town is Ironland, anyway.
Levi shook his head.
I've never heard of this bank. Have you, Jack?
I think there's some place like that near First Square,
Jack pondered. And N's spirits lifted even higher. This was a real lead. Levi rubbed his thumb on the edge of the token.
These numbers might reference a vault.
Then we'll go tomorrow, N declared. Tomorrow afternoon.
She packed up their papers, eager to leave this place and the tragedy they'd uncovered behind.
Lords won't be hiding in some bank, Lola said.
N shook her head. This was about more than just finding Lords now. If this was the bank that held the account N had accidentally discovered, the one Lords had kept secret all this time, then this meant answers. And it also meant vaults. A lot of vaults.
You'll be there with us, Levi told Lola. You're in this now, too. We all are.
Involved enough to be hanged for it, you mean?
That's a rather depressing notion, but sure. How did you put it earlier?
He grinned.
Oh, right. You're one of the villains now.
Day 6. Avarice, pride, and lust. These are all modest desires. What the City of Sin truly craves is destruction. The City of Sin. A guidebook. Where to go and where not to. Levi. Walking into Old Town usually felt like walking home, but today Levi had a sinking, anxious feeling in his chest. He shouldn't be worried. With Bianca's gift, his own salary, N's payment, and 2 days' worth of gambling spoils, he had 7,000 of the 10,000 volts he needed to pay Cedric Torrin. A few more casinos, a few more lucky streaks, and he was going to make it. Even so, the alleys felt narrower and darker than usual, the way Old Town probably looked to those who didn't belong. But Levi more than belonged. He owned this place. Its filth and rust and ruin were the Iron Lord's claim.
How are you doing? Jack asked beside him.
Was his unease that obvious? He molded his face into a neutral expression.
I'm fine, he answered. I know what Raymond was to you. I'd rather not talk about it.
He didn't think his current state of mind was related to Raymond. He knew the ache of grief from his mother's death. It hadn't come yet. Raymond's death still felt unbelievable more than anything else. But it would. This feeling just wasn't that.
Jonas already has patrols stationed around the borders.
Jack shook his head.
I know we talked about getting some dealers into Double or Nothing, but that den is right on the border. Might be too risky now. There's plenty of other opportunities in our own territory.
Already things were changing. Levi typically met with Raymond once a week to talk about the investment scheme or the happenings of New Reigns. Raymond always paid attention to things Levi didn't care about, politics, the families, current events. But if it couldn't earn him a profit, Levi generally tuned it out.
You could be my second,
Raymond had suggested to him several years ago. It had been October, around Levi's 14th birthday. Raymond had bought Levi a beer, which Levi had pretended was his first drink, otherwise Raymond would have been mad.
I don't want to be your second, Levi had answered. Then what do you want?
I want to be a lord.
Raymond shook his head.
You're better than us. No, I'm not, Levi had said. Not yet.
When Levi first had the idea for the Irons consulting business, he'd pitched it to Raymond. When he'd made a few enemies on the streets, Raymond had taken care of them. When he'd needed something, anything at all, Raymond's door was open. Raymond hadn't been his best friend. He wouldn't sit up all night, several glasses drunk, talking about the things that haunted him. Levi turned to Jack when he was looking for a typical night's worth of trouble. But it was Raymond he'd turn to when he needed help.
But the one time Raymond had needed him, he'd been too late.
"Let's not talk about Double or Nothing right now," Levi said quickly, anxious to focus on something else.
Maybe grief wasn't waiting around to be found. Maybe it was called.
"Chase will be expecting votes," Jack said.
Today was Thursday, and although it wasn't an official Irons meeting, it was collection day. Chez delivered the vaults collected from their clients to Levi, and Levi recorded them and distributed all the Irons' individual earnings to Chez. Chez was the middleman between him, his clients, and the other Irons. Levi used to spend more face time with his gang, had always made a point to check in with all the Irons individually, until Vianca's scheme started dragging him down.
"Then I'll give him the vaults," Levi answered seriously.
"You need those," Jack said. "I know you don't have the 10,000 for Cedric yet."
"I have 7. I can part with 500 and earn it back tonight."
"You're good with cards, Levi, but your life isn't something to gamble."
He wasn't being reckless. He just couldn't hold out on the Irons anymore. Every time he looked at Mansi, she was a bit thinner. All this time, Levi hadn't thought he had a choice. He was backed into a desperate situation. Stealing from the Irons had felt like his only option. But the more he interacted with N, the more he remembered what he was like before he came to New Reigns. Every time he lied to her, he had to ask himself why. Why not tell her about his own shadow cards? About how he ran the Irons? About the kind of man he was? But he knew why. He couldn't bear to see the disappointment in her eyes if she knew the truth. The one thing he hadn't given to this city was his shame.
"I need to make things right," he said quietly.
Jack nodded. It was exactly the sort of language his second understood. 3 years ago, after Jack had lost months and friends and dignity to Lullaby, the first thing he did was make amends. After Levi paid Cedric and put this mess behind him, he intended to build the legacy and empire he'd always dreamed of.
"Sometimes we're not who we want to be, because we're supposed to be something else."
That was what he'd told Anne the other night. And it made him realize every time he felt guilt and disgust in his chest over what he was doing, that it was his own fault. Not Bianca's, not Cedric's. His. He was meant for more than this.
"Have you talked to N since yesterday?" Jack asked.
"No,"
Levi said. The events of the past 2 days flooded over him like a strong drink. The way her body had felt tucked against his, how her breath had caught on the mole when he'd whispered in her ear. The gleam in her eyes when she'd claimed she knew what she wanted, even as she looked at him like that. Like she knew exactly what she did to him. The other night, when she told him she was a miser, he thought he sensed her mutual desire. But as yesterday had proved, the flirting was definitely one-sided. He couldn't let the hopeless attraction get to his head. He had more important things to focus on.
"You need to be careful around her," Jack warned.
"What do you mean?"
"I'm not sure she's good for you."
Levi stopped and stared at him.
"You weren't wrong. You did know too much. You were already involved. But this is why I didn't want her to tell you everything else. Because I might get nervous about my friend's safety. Because you're superstitious. And you worry too much."
To those who still followed the faith, the misers were a subject of law. Some claimed that misers were the first to have talents, and all other talents resulted from reactions to vaults held in people's skin. To Levi, it was all nonsense. Misers were just people like everyone else. But that wasn't even what really bothered him. What bothered him was that he didn't need Jack to tell him that falling for N was a dangerous idea.
"How well do you really know her?" Jack asked.
"Well enough. Can we not?
I never met Lords Alfero like you did, but I know her reputation. She's cold, cunning, and dangerous.
I'm not saying Annie's lying about who she is. I think she was just as clueless about New Reigns as she acted. But the way she knows all our street rules, how Lola said she almost killed her, all the muck about her talents and her family..."
"I'm not sure what you're getting at," Levi said,
and he really wasn't.
"What did Lords have in mind for her? What is N supposed to become?"
"I don't think her goal is to become anything. She wants to find a mother. And she wants to...
leave. The last part disappointed him more than it should.
Maybe so, but...
Jack shook his head, sighing.
It doesn't matter. You already wrecked, man.
Another detail Levi didn't need Jack to tell him.
But let's just get this meeting with Chez over with.
They walked to the edge of the square by the old fountain, which was bone dry and covered with dust. At its center, where water had once spurted, a sculpture of a miser queen stood, the details of her gown's fabric worn down by the elements. Someone, many years ago, had decapitated her. The head still lay in the fountain, its features no longer distinguishable. Chez was nowhere to be seen.
"Think he forgot?" Levi asked,
even though he doubted Chez would forget a potential payment.
"I can stop by the house to look for him," Jack said. "You good waiting here?"
"Yeah, go ahead."
Jack disappeared down an alley. Levi tapped his foot and stared at the black-stained clouds, only slivers of which were visible through Old Town's towers and spires. Almost as soon as Jack was gone, Chez appeared from one of the off-shooting alleys. He flipped his knife around his knuckles and walked kind of stagger-like, strange for someone usually so swift on his feet. His massive shirt was damp enough that Levi could see his skin and all his ribs sticking out like piano keys. He'd probably swiped it from a drying clothesline on the way here. It reminded him of how Chez had looked 3 years ago, when Levi had dragged him out of the brint and pumped life into him. A stranger. A kid. Chez wasn't so self-righteous then. Mansi followed him, a dark expression on her face. The anxious feeling in Levi's chest tightened.
"Lo, pup," Chez said. "Don't call me that," Levi said automatically, all his senses suddenly alert.
Something was wrong. Chez and Mansi stopped in front of him. It was so quiet Levi could hear the horns from the harbor, almost a mile away.
"There's been a decision," Chez said, still twirling his knife.
"What kind of decision?" Levi asked.
He looked questioningly at Mansi, but she wouldn't meet his eyes.
"The Irons want me to challenge you,"
he answered. Levi stiffened.
Challenge was a loaded term on the streets. It meant a fight to topple the Lord from his seat. A duel to the death.
"You can't be serious," Levi said.
He stared at his third's ribs and hesitated to reach for his own knife. No way Chez would really go through with this.
"I am. The Scarhands are under new management. It's time we were too."
Levi winced. Chez wouldn't lose sleep over Raymond's death, but he knew Raymond and Levi had been friends. His words were meant to slice.
"I have the vaults, Chez," Levi growled. "Isn't that what you came for?"
"They'd be a temporary solution to a permanent problem."
Chez raised his knife to chest level.
"I don't feel sorry for you. Not a bit. All that work for Bianca, and none goes to us. The Irons will be safer with you gone."
"I saved your life,"
Levi said, still in disbelief.
"I've been your friend."
"That was a long time ago."
Levi looked at Mansi. Chez, he could believe. The other Irons, maybe, but Mansi. Mansi had looked up to him since the beginning. When had that changed? She crossed her arms and turned away. It felt like a nail had been driven into his chest, into his coffin. Maybe he deserved this. Maybe the Irons deserved better. But he would still fight for what was his. He removed the pistol he'd been carrying and handed it to Mansi. Duels were knives only, and despite everything, if he did lose, he wanted Mansi to have it. If he was being honest with himself, he didn't think that he could beat a Phillips in a fight. Chess had to be 3 times faster than him. But it was damn hard to break a street oath. He'd be hurting. Maybe that was all the advantage Levi would need to win. To win. A challenge was a duel to the death. So it was Chez or Levi. Only one of them would be walking out of Old Town with their throat intact. Levi pulled out his knife and moved into a fighting stance, but his legs trembled and his arms felt weak. He wasn't supposed to die here, just another kid playing Lord whom no one would remember.
Chez lunged forward. Levi dodged his knife but missed the punch he'd aimed at Chez's shoulder. His third was all skin and no bones, quicker with a blade, and of course, fast as lightning. Chez ran forward and sank his knife into Levi's leg. Levi let out a scream and frantically jabbed his own blade as he fell, but he never made contact. Hot blood boiled out of his thigh. Chez kicked him in the side 1, 2, 3 times. Besides the pain, all Levi could think of was how fast he'd gone down. 4, 5. His stomach flipped over, and he swallowed down a tide of vomit. If he was going to die, he wouldn't die covered in his own sick. He should have probably been thinking about something more profound, but he didn't have a family who would miss him or lovers who would weep. All he had was his dignity.
Chez! Someone shouted.
Levi's heart was pounding too loudly to hear who it was. The nerves around the knife wound in his leg screamed, and his stomach ached all over.
Stop it!
Chez kicked Levi again, this time in the head. Everything darkened. His thoughts swirled around his brain like a funnel, and he wondered if maybe it was the ground spinning and spinning and spinning, sucking him inside the earth. A few more screams, then some grunts, a clatter, footsteps. Levi couldn't tell if it happened in a millisecond or in minutes, but then something pressed against his leg, and Levi stifled a scream. The person bending over him was a shadow, but everything was a shadow in Old Town.
Muck, muck, this is really happening.
The person wrenched his hand away, and the pain in Levi's leg lessened slightly. He could sense his aura, weightless and translucent. Jack.
Stay with me. You can't die on me.
Jack's words spun too. Panicked hands found their way down Levi's shirt, against his chest. A welcome warmth filled him, easing the pain, coaxing him back into lucidity. His eyes widened.
No,
he moaned, swatting Jack away. As the hands let go, so too did the warmth. Levi began to shiver. Only the cold and the pain remained, sharp enough to numb everything else. All his adrenaline gone, and with it his sense of feeling. All his life gone. The ground caved in, and he hit bottom. N stood in the hallway of black and white doors, searching for the right one. She spun in a circle, looking for something familiar. The previous door she'd opened had been her memory of the last time she spoke to Lourdes, but she couldn't remember which door it was. The hallway stretched endlessly in both directions, every inch of it the same. She walked to a black door. Those belonged to her. Inside, she heard thunder. She opened it hesitantly and peeked into its darkness. Unlike her first visit to the hallway, when she had relived a memory, this time she was a spectator. She was in the basement of a home she didn't recognize, and a storm raged outside. A young person clutched what looked like a 3-year-old N in her arms. As a toddler, N's hair had been curlier, her eyes less wide set. She was red in the face from crying, scared by the storm. The person shushed her softly.
Lordy has you. Lordy has you.
That was the name N had called Lourdes when she was little. But this person was surely too young to be Lourdes, N thought, even though it was clearly her. That evening her long blonde hair was tied at the nape of her neck and braided down to her waist. She wore fluid clothes, but they didn't fit her properly. It was a time before Lourdes had tailored all her outfits. Otherwise her woman's clothes were always too short, her men's always hanging or tight in the wrong areas. If Ellen had to guess, Lourdes was about 18 in this memory. Neither the child nor Lourdes took any notice of Anne standing there, so she sat down next to her mother, curled her legs to her chest, and listened with them to the storm. Eventually the toddler stopped whimpering and fell asleep. Lourdes leaned her head back against the wall, her face weary. She winced with every new crack of thunder, and eventually also began to cry. It was strange to see Lourdes like this. There was something rawer about her. In all N's memories, Lourdes had never cried.
Apparently, she hadn't always been so reserved. "Tell me what happened," En wanted to say. "Tell me your story." But of course her mother couldn't hear her. En didn't leave until Lords fell asleep. Then she slipped out and through the next black door in the hallway, eager for more forgotten time spent with her mother. Except in this scene, En was alone. She was 16 years old, and she wasn't where she was supposed to be. She crept across the upstairs hallway in her nightgown, an unused lantern at her side. Last time she'd attempted this, Lords had discovered her in the act, and it had developed into a shouting match, one of the first they'd ever had. But Lords was on another one of her trips to New Rains, and En was alone in the house, except for the staff. She knelt in front of Lords' office door and pulled a pin from her hair. It took nearly 30 minutes for her to pick the lock. She had no idea what she was doing, but the longer she sat there, fiddling, the more understanding she developed of the mechanisms. Finally, she heard the lock click, and she turned the knob and crawled into the room. The office was stark, almost empty. She went for the desk first, yanking out drawers full of pencils and rubbish. Lords had always been impressively messy. Searching for something, anything to explain her mother's business in the City of Sin. En turned on the lantern, heart pounding, and examined the bank slips in the cabinet. The address on the papers was in New Rains, but neither 16-year-old En, nor the En peering over her shoulder, recognized the address. 1089 Virtue Street, New Rains. The statement was dated from a few months ago, from Lord's last trip to the city. And, both their eyes widened as they examined the document, it was for a bank account with a balance of over 200 million volts. Both of them gasped. Memory En threw the papers back in the cabinet and slammed it closed, and the En who watched her remembered what she'd been thinking. It was a wealth unlike that of anyone she knew, anything she'd ever heard of. En knew Lords had inherited money from her own mysterious family, but she'd never imagined anything like that. The memory used to hold shame for En. This was the one time she had betrayed Lord's trust and uncovered a secret she shouldn't have known. But as her present self left the room and returned to the hallway, her guilt was gone. She wished she'd explored more of the office that night. Maybe she would have stumbled across another clue, something to help in the present search for her mother. Had En known any of the secrets she knew now, everything would be different. En would have journeyed to New Rains sooner, or asked to go with Lords. She found a new black door. It was the first one that wasn't a memory. The room smelled sweet. En stood facing a mirror. Below her, a joint of mistress burned in an ashtray, its soot golden, matching her costume and the shimmery eyeshadow she wore. En's boots were black, heeled and rose to mid-thigh. A garter belt snaked up her legs and disappeared underneath a corseted dress, which was sequined from navel to cleavage, and crisscrossed in violet ribbon. The bust was strapless, meant to be removed more than admired. The feathers protruding from its bottom would do little to cover her if she bent over. Still, it was hard to feel exposed when there was no one here but her. She shuffled through the cosmetic products on the counter, then reached for a sweet-smelling perfume and a lipstick black as licorice. She examined herself in the mirror. No one would call her a doll in this outfit, or much of a lady. She smiled to herself. There was no one but her to know. After all, this was only a dream. Jazzy music played outside, and she followed it to the stage. The lights were too bright to see into the audience, if there was anyone there at all. She remembered Demi's routine with a mixture of embarrassment and thrill. Without the leering eyes of anyone watching her, she felt powerful in these clothes, attractive. If the world were a different sort of place, she might trim off the feathers and wear it for fun. She danced alone on the stage. Nothing suggestive, at first. It took a few minutes for her to decide such a style would be fun to try. She unlaced the ribbons on her corset. Several minutes into the routine, she became aware of the fact that she was no longer dreaming. Her head was pressed against the pillow. Her nightdress was twisted around her stomach, her feet dangling off the edge of the bed. But she wasn't done exploring the dream just yet, so she didn't open her eyes. At some point in her sleepy, half-conscious state, she inserted someone else into her fantasy. An admiring gaze, hands trailing down her hips, lips brushing against her chest. The light in her window brightened from the sunrise. She was now mostly conscious and exceptionally frustrated. She untwisted her nightdress and scratched an itch on her thigh. Then her hand trailed up and lingered between her legs, making up for the fantasy that was slowly fading. If she were anywhere else but New Rains, in her dormitory, in her own bedroom, she probably wouldn't have dared. She rubbed her lips together as if she could still feel the smoothness of the black lipstick, could still feel the thrilling empowerment of the stage lights and the stranger's stomach pressed against hers. When she finished, she was breathless and sweaty. She opened her eyes and stared at the ceiling of her St. Maurice apartment. At first, she felt embarrassed, even if it was no different from that stage where no one could see her. She'd never been a prude, but an experience lent itself to shyness, even around herself. She climbed out of bed and sat at her vanity. Her face was slightly flushed, and the indentations of the pillow lined her cheek. She examined her lipsticks and selected the shade closest to black. N waited in the St. Maurice lobby, tapping her foot. It was past the meeting time and no one else had arrived yet. When she'd knocked on Levi's door, there'd been no answer, and she honestly wasn't certain if Lola would even show. It was ludicrous to put any faith in dreams, but nothing about the hallway felt like one. The scenes were still fresh in her mind, the memories exact in every detail, as though she'd really experienced them. She traced her finger over the guidebook's map. Virtue Street was located in Old Town, exactly where Lola thought the bank would be. The road ran parallel to Trop Street, Virtue and Vice never intersecting. Just as she'd begun to worry about the others, Lola strode in through the revolving doors, wearing her now familiar top hat. She took one look around St. Maurice's gaudy interior and grimaced. "You're wearing lipstick," Lola commented. She squinted at N's face, as if examining an optical illusion. "It suits you." This was the first nice thing Lola had ever said to her. She beamed. "Thank you." N felt it suited her too. "Where are the Iron Boys?" "I'm not sure. They should have been here a while ago." She shouldn't worry. What trouble could they have found by mid-morning? Maybe they just slept in after a long night. "Then it's just us," Lola said. Even though there was no threat in her voice, the words unnerved N. She was glad she'd brought Levi's revolver. Several days had passed since the night she'd stolen it, but he'd never asked for it back. Maybe she'd keep it. Still, Lola was right. There was no point in wasting more of the day. They ventured outside and headed to the bank. Old Town was particularly quiet that morning, few people venturing outside due to the sudden heat. N, however, relished the weather. She'd felt as though she'd left summer behind her when she sailed away from Bellamy. She pulled her guidebook out and followed the route on the map. Neither of them spoke for some time, which was just fine with N, as she was too lost in her own thoughts. Without even sharing Lord's blood name, how would she gain access to the account? Would Lords have opened the account in her name, or under another alias? And even if N gained access, what would she do with all those vaults? Lola's voice interrupted N's thoughts. "Can I ask you something?" "Sure," N said nervously. There was no bite or threat in Lola's voice, but that was precisely why she was nervous. "If Lords raised you as your mother, why do you call her by her first name?" Anne shrugged. She never wanted me to call her mother. She had wondered this herself when she was younger, but even though Lords had never discussed her own family, Anne got the sense she'd had a complicated relationship with her own mother. "Can I ask you a question now?" Anne asked. Lola's eyebrows furrowed, and she crossed her arms. "I guess. If you're not a dove, why do you dye your hair white?" It felt like a simple question, but clearly it was one Lola didn't want to answer. "Don't ask me that," she growled, then brushed past N and walked several steps ahead of her for the rest of the trip. The sign for Virtue Street was rusted over, and layers of kiss marks covered it in all shades of lipstick.
"We're here," Lola said. "You can kiss the sign if you'd like. It's a new Rain's tradition."
Anne grimaced. "I'll pass." They stopped another block down the street. According to a plaque outside, the building before them was indeed the bank. But Anne could just as easily have mistaken it for a penitentiary. Wrought iron gates encircled the grounds and guarded each of its windows. Larger-than-life obsidian statues lined the walkway to the front door. But dark sacks covered each of their heads, like the sort draped over a man as he approached the gallows.
"Miser kings, probably," Lola said cheerfully.
Anne shivered. They could have just taken them down.
They're reminders, not decorations.
They walked inside and approached the main desk, entirely protected by bulletproof glass, except for a sliver of space to exchange documents, a harsh contrast to the marble grandeur of its decor. The woman behind the desk was elderly, with one keen blue eye and a second wooden one. Anne slid her token under the glass. The woman snatched it up and held it close to her good eye.
"These aren't the standard engravings," she remarked suspiciously.
She rubbed her thumb over the cameo of the Miser Queen.
"This is very outdated."
"We'd like access to the vault that coin opens," Anne said firmly.
"You can only enter the vault if your name is on the account."
The woman turned to a file cabinet and perused it for the correct number.
There are several listed. Are you a Ms. Lord Zarefla?"
Anne stilled and whispered to Lola, "Do you think that's her real name?"
"That's just our pharaoh backwards, thickhead," Lola hissed.
Anne reddened. "No," she told the woman, "I'm not." The woman adjusted her bifocals.
"A Ms. Ariane Salter?"
Excitement surged in Anne's chest. Lords did put her name on the account. Maybe Anne had been meant to find this place after all. She shoved her identification documents through the window.
"Yes, that's me."
Several minutes later, a security guard led them to a rather haunting steel elevator, and from there to the bottommost level. The hallway had concrete walls, flickering fluorescent lighting, and grated metal doors lining either side. They walked until reaching the hallway's end, where the guard gestured to a vault on their right. Anne took a deep breath and slid the token into the coin slot. There was a metal clanking from inside, followed by several clicks of unlatching locks. The handle spun counterclockwise 3 times before the door creaked open. Anne cautiously stepped inside. At first she was confused. She'd expected dozens of shelves of orbs, enough to contain the fortune she'd uncovered in those bank slips. The vault was completely empty. She placed a hand on the wall, steadying herself. Another dead end.
"Look,"
Lola said, picking up a small object Anne hadn't noticed in the corner. It was a single miniature orb made of black glass, with golden sparks glowing faintly inside. Vaults were white, not gold, which meant it wasn't a real orb.
"Is it a trick?"
Anne asked, walking closer to Lola. She tried not to let her disappointment show, but her voice was catching. Had Lords emptied the vault since Anne had found the statement? Why leave behind this toy? Lola held it up to the light and examined it.
"Do you have a vault reader?"
Anne did, in her purse. She held the sensor to the orb's metal cap, but nothing registered. She sighed and shoved both the reader and the black orb into her bag. "Has the account been emptied recently?" she asked the guard.
"Why would I know that?" he snapped.
Anne put her hands on her hips and stared around the empty room. The metal walls reminded her of a prison cell, and she shivered, feeling claustrophobic. No leads, no answers. She was trapped in this city. As Anne turned around to leave, she caught a glint at the corner of her eye. There was a faint line in the wall to her left, almost imperceptible, As she walked toward it, she made out the thin outline of a square. She ran her fingers across its edges. Her nails found a latch in the metal, and she flipped it open, revealing a keyhole. En fished around her purse. "Do you have a key?" Lola asked. "This should do," En said, brandishing a bobby pin. "You're joking. You some expert lockpicker." "I've done it before. Once." En fiddled the bobby pin around the lock, searching for its mechanisms. The lock was no more complicated than the one on Lord's office. Perhaps Lord's had felt the box's concealment was protection enough. After about a minute, the lock clicked open. En smiled triumphantly and yanked out the bent bobby pin. The drawer slid open, and En pulled out a bronze coin. It was a token matching her own, only with a king on its face rather than a queen. It was hot to the touch, almost burning, with no discernible reason as to why. Unlike the queen's token, this one lacked the signature ridges that made it a key. It was simply a coin. "Feel this," En said, handing the coin to Lola. "It's warm." Lola touched it, then shook her head. "Most people keep vaults in a bank." "Do you know what it is?" "Seems like a regular coin to me. It's old, though. Much older than the key. Well, it must be important, if Lords took the trouble to hide it like that." That was what she tried to convince herself, anyway. She'd come here for answers, but was leaving with trinkets. The more she uncovered about her mother, the less she seemed to understand her. En slid the new token to her purse as well. She gazed around the room for any other mysterious hiding places, but found none. She swallowed her disappointment. "So we found nothing," En murmured. Lola gave her a weak, awkward smile. "It's not nothing." "Yes, it is," En said stiffly. She wished Levi were here to comfort her, rather than the blood-gazer. En would probably cry if Lola's harsh words from yesterday weren't so fresh in her mind. "Crying now, you're something else." She shouldn't care what Lola thought of her. She'd certainly made her contempt perfectly clear. But En still didn't want to face further judgment. She was too easily wounded right now. Thankfully, Lola kept quiet on their return upstairs. However, as soon as they exited the elevator, Lola marched across the lobby, her boots thumping loudly on the marble floor. "Do you have any other information on the account?" she asked the woman. En hovered, shocked, behind her. "Statements? Other names? Anything?" The woman retrieved the paperwork a second time. "There's a final name listed on the account. This one with an address." She leaned closer to it, her real eye squinting. "A Ms. Zula Slick. Number 19. The Street of the Holy Tombs. That's everything I have." The weight of En's disappointment lifted. Lola turned around, shooting En a triumphant smile. "That's also in Old Town," Lola said. "We could go now." En debated for a moment. She wanted to, but her acrobatic show was that night. Even if her role in the troupe was a farce, a diversion from the real reason Bianca had hired her, she was actually looking forward to the performance. For once, she had achieved a somewhat notable role. But her ambitions didn't matter, not in comparison to finding her mother. "Maybe we can... But we should wait for the boys," Lola said. "The Street of the Holy Tombs is deeper into Old Town. We might not be safe if we ran into any irons." En had faced Doveland unscathed. Certainly she could manage the same in Old Town. But truthfully, even if Lola had proved helpful today, Levi's presence would be a comfort. His absence today already had her worried. "Tomorrow morning, then," En suggested. "But I have guild meetings tomorrow." Lola sounded almost let down about it. "Do you think Lords will be there?" En stilled.
She didn't want to consider that she might actually find her mother tomorrow. Her chest was already weary from carrying all this repeated hope and disappointment. I don't know.